Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. And today is Thursday, January the 15th, 2015. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody, to the show. We're honored and delighted that you've chosen to join us and that we get this opportunity to have another conversation about the process of internal healing, a la 2,000-year-old teachings of Yeshua on first-century Aramaic forgiveness. Our purpose is simple. It's straightforward. If we as what appear to be humans are not functioning out of love, then we're not functioning out of our humanness. We've lost our humanness when hostility and fear makes its appearance in our mind and we think or speak out of that hostility, fear, frustration, rage, guilt, what have you. And the idea of first century Aramaic forgiveness is to restore us to the truth of who we are. And of course, the truth of who we are, if you hold a newborn child, you get a direct experience of who we are. We are this, and we are designed to function as this awesome presence of love. Every person on the planet started out the same. Yes, the terrorists, the jihadists, the this, the that, the whoever, whatever, however, we all started out the same. What happened? Well, we acquired a little garbage along the way. Not much different today than it was 2,000 years ago. And there was an absolutely monumental piece of information and understanding that came to the forefront 2,000 years ago. And that is that instead of, you know, there's pretty common agreement throughout the culture that about 95% of our thinking processes are unconscious. I don't know if there's somebody with a mic open, Jeannie, that's clicking and making noises, but I'm getting noises in my sound here. But anyway, so there's pretty broad agreement that probably 95% of our processes are unconscious. And, of course, if we're functioning unconsciously, it makes it very difficult to stay on track with truly being a conscious creator. And the monumental thing that came to Earth 2,000 years ago was that a man who said, "Follow me, do what I'm telling you to do," functioned consciously and showed people how to have direct access to their own unconscious dynamics. That in any case where your mind is guiding you to do something that is against your own will and choice, there is a systematic, reliable way to consistently and persistently touch into your own unconscious dynamics and clean it up. Change those dynamics. It's an awesome, awesome piece of information. Unfortunately, the Greeks turned it into something that it wasn't, And so we've gotten a twisted view of this tool. The tool is called forgiveness. It has nothing to do with letting other people off the hook because of what's going on inside of us. It is the tool with which, if I use it, I get in touch directly in this specific, precise circumstance with the hidden part of my mind that's causing the problem, and I get to clean it out. It is monumental. People spend thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for somebody to tell them what's going on in their unconscious. When each person who chooses to utilize and practice the tool has a way to do precisely that. Now, most authorities don't want that tool to be known, I believe, and this is just my belief, because they need for people to function unconsciously in order to control them. There are purposely instilled unconscious dynamics that when somebody rattles those chains, bang, 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 when somebody pushes those buttons, people function unconsciously. And that's what authorities want. They want obedient followers. They don't want creative human beings. And so this work is about restoring each and every person, including the king that doesn't know any better because he's functioning unconsciously, to restore each person to conscious creatorship. And, you know, who knows what the game on planet Earth will be like when that understanding becomes commonly known. And that's what this work is all about. That is exactly what we are here to do, is to bring forward that level of understanding. And so we welcome you to the show. We're delighted that you're here. If you want to access the how-to of that tools, there are several different ways to do it. You can do it and pay us for it. You know, if you want to support the work that we're doing, if you've, at some time over the last 25 years sat in a why is this happening to me again, or a healing through relationships, or a codependence, or a getting the stress you need workshop, and it had meaningful and significant impact in your life, then you could choose to support us, of course, with a donation or buy materials. You could pay for the information by going to our website and ordering from whyagain.org the information on how to advance your practice of these tools. That's one way to do it. And the other way to do it, and we're delighted for you to do it either way, of course, the support is always appreciated, when it happens, because it's no cheap project to do all the facets of what we're doing. But the other way to do it is just go to our website, whyagain.org, and there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. If you click that bullseye will open a series of links that will explain the whole forgiveness process to you. It will give you the latest worksheet, and actually, we've got a new version of the worksheet. I'm sitting as we speak. Since my conversation this morning with Susan Darnell, where she mentioned a small change that she'd made in the worksheet, but a significant change, I went right to the worksheet and made that change. And actually, since I talked to her this morning, I've been kind of renovating the look of it, so we'll see the not big significant changes, but a more logical layout in a couple of things. And the passage on the right-hand side in the box that said, I release my need to make up another story. In passing, Susan just said, oh, well, I actually changed that, and I cancel my goal, or I cancel my need. So I was like, click, yes, good idea. So the new worksheet, which will probably be on the website in the next 24 hours or so, will say, I cancel my need to be right and make up another story out of these brain cells to hallucinate proof that my fear, hostility-based story, my reality is true. So there'll be a small change there. And then a couple of other layout changes. So you can get to look forward to playing with a slightly updated version. It'll be our first version of 2015. So that'll be cool. Looking forward to that. And other than that, there's one other little piece of information that I came across, which I thought everybody might find interesting. There's a piece of research that was turned up recently that documented or proved that women who carry a little bit of extra weight live longer than the men who talk about it, who bring it up. I just thought that was an interesting piece of research. So, Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us?
He is, and I need to turn him back on. So hold on just one second.
Okay, let's say hello to the young man.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, sir, how do you be?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, good. Awesome.
I was unmute challenged at the beginning of the show.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that was me making all that noise as I was trying to prepare some lunch.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I hope you enjoy your lunch. We had a little breakfast a little while ago, and after the show we're going to do the same. What did you think of that piece of research? I thought that was really interesting.
That's a scary piece of research.
And I think you're walking on thin ice.
Yeah. That's the kind of research I don't want to go near. I don't want to read it. I don't want to discuss it.
I thought it was funny.
Well, I had a presentation this morning where I did an hour-long presentation to a business group on power struggles and goal canceling and being responsible for my internal state before I decide to make decisions, whether it's in my business or my personal life. So that was interesting, and I was mentioning it to somebody after the talk that it's still surprising to me how many people, when I talk about anger, fear, sadness, and hurt, and shame, and guilt all being an inside job, they're in the audience shaking their heads no and disagreeing. And the conditioning is so fierce and so strong that even when asked to just, don't believe me, just observe this in your own life, people won't even do that. They are clinging so tightly to the construction that it's what's outside me that's causing my emotions. And because this person did this and now I'm feeling that, then I need to go do this to them. And, I mean, it's at the root of things. You know, there was this massacre in France where they had this paper that ran cartoons. And the cartoons, now this is all in quotes, but there are people who believe that the cartoons are so offensive to them that they had to go over there and shoot the people that drew the cartoons. And there was a cartoon that came out after the massacre, and it showed a terrorist, his face is covered with a mask, and he's got smoking guns in both hands, and he's standing over the corpse of someone that he's just shot, and it was clearly one of the artists at the cartoon factory, and there's a cartoon laying there, and there's pens, and the caption is that the person who just shot the other person is standing there saying, well, but he drew first.
He drew first.
Oh.
And it's the insanity that's behind road rage. Yep. It's behind every war. It's behind every divorce. You need to change so I can feel better. Yeah, but you need to change so I can feel better. Okay, but you need to change more than I need to change. It's an endless loop, and it leads to all of our pain and suffering, and the good news is there's a way out.
Well, it's interesting, you know, just using that example that you just spoke about, It is obvious to everybody who doesn't hold the belief that, you know, those drawings are so offensive we should murder over it. I think that some of the drawings were pretty bizarre and pretty insane and pretty offensive. You know, if there's such a thing as a standard of offense within the, it's obvious to anyone who doesn't hold that extreme view that it's an inside job. So, I mean, that's a great example of it. It's an inside job that somebody would actually kill somebody over a few lines on a piece of paper and the meaning that each person's mind gives it. But with all the conditioning of the culture, that's a tough piece of information for most people to get to.
Tough piece of information. And I, for one, am
and an urgent
grateful.
One.
And I'm grateful for having access to these tools, which let me literally step out of my own little irritations and frustrations and rages that I used to go through on a daily basis, just like most of the other people around me, and have a whole different quality of life with more joy, more flexibility, a lot less anger and frustration, and I'm grateful for that.
Yes, I agree with you. And theoretically, of course, heading for the place where we are totally and completely incapable of anger and frustration. That would be, you know, the point I was making in the introduction. Who knows what our world is going to look like if 7.5 billion people wake up in the morning as human beings, fully active in the presence of love, and look out at the person beside them, across the street from them, across the country, the person who draws the cartoons through a mind of love, which is what, you know, Yeshua came to bring with the teaching to do that, and it's exactly what Muhammad came to bring too. You know, several scholars have been saying, you know, this is a far more offensive thing. This murdering is far more an offense to the name of Muhammad, the prophet, than it is for the cartoons to have been drawn. And you know, it's just the way that a mind can be brainwashed, and this is what authorities who count on people functioning unconsciously do, and oftentimes, and, you know, so-called, and I say the word carefully, so-called religious authorities who want to take advantage of the internal rage and hook it up to unconscious thoughts about how it's somebody else's fault, and if we can just kill enough people. You know, if you look at the original meaning of the word jihad, it's used many times in the Quran, but it's about me going inside myself, and, you know, it's exactly the work we're doing. It's about me going inside and cleaning up my hostility and fear-based mind and coming back to the truth of who I am and functioning truly as a human being. But, of course, we know that the meanings of words can be manipulated. You know, Karl Marx said it very well, change the meaning of a culture's words and you can change the culture. And so I truly believe, you know, if you look at the Quran, the name of Yeshua is mentioned far more often than Muhammad. And, you know, you look at this idea of changing the meanings of words and the whole game gets crazy. And the teaching is about living, really, truly living in a state of peace. It is one of the Abrahamic religions that is a descendant from Abraham. And the conversation is about peace, but men can change the meaning of words and, you know, take advantage of that fact when people function unconsciously. And to me, that's the peace that Yeshua brought that's so monumental, is in any circumstance, any condition, anywhere, anytime, that I'm functioning on an internal dynamic that I don't know is about me, if I'm willing to do that worksheet process, if I'm willing to forgive, bang, I'm right in touch with my own unconscious dynamics. And it always, still, after 35 years of working with people, it still amazes me what, when people will engage in the forgiveness process, they get in touch with and what changes in their lives. It's just the most awesome thing I've ever seen. So anything else on your mind? Anything else to share, sir?
No, that's good for me.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I'll send you more about that piece of research if you'd like. And
please don't.
All right, Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up in the phone queue or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
No, everybody in the chat room, we're just kind of saying hi, and there's no hands up. So if someone presses one, you're first in line without waiting. I know yesterday, just about the time we were getting ready to go off the air, a couple of hands went up. So let's not wait till the last 30 seconds. Go ahead and press one.
Yeah, and for those who do wait for the last, you know, minute or 2 minutes, with a question that's probably a 10 or 20 or maybe more minute discussion, you might look at how you self-sabotage and how you set yourself up so you don't get to complete. And, you know, there's lots of time. We've got close to an hour. What have we got left here? We've got about 40 minutes and lots of time for questions or thought and support. And we are here. You know, the whole purpose of this process, this this whole happening every day of the worksheet is to support each and every person in making use of this tool of forgiveness, understanding precisely how it works, and then being supported in using it. And I just think that's a pretty awesome thing. And I certainly am blessed by the fact that I get to play.
We have a hand up.
Bring this forward. Hey, let's go for it.
Area code 417, you're on the air.
Hello. Are you
hey
guys
there, 417?
All
got
right.
You.
Well, listen, I've got a
who
thought on this
to?
Forgiveness thing, and it's real nice because
who,
see,
who are we talking to?
It's Buddy. My name is Buddy.
Oh, okay, Buddy.
And the truth is that you know, you can beat yourself to death over a lifetime looking for forgiveness. But the truth is this: I found that when you start making right decisions, you don't have much to forgive yourself for anymore. You know, it's like you learn your lessons. The best thing about forgiveness is I learned it, and you can't get me to do it again. You see,
no.
That's the issue.
Well,
it has,
Buddy,
you can forgive yourself
yeah, buddy.
Over and over and over again for the things that you do, but the truth is you keep doing them. And the point
well,
is...
Well, Buddy, hold,
yeah.
Hold for a second.
We're gonna
offer a different thought, and that is that if you've been forgiving yourself for something, then you haven't been forgiving at all. If you've been forgiving other people for something, then you haven't been doing true forgiveness. What has happened is, and you know, consistent with the thought I offered earlier of Karl Marx says, if you change the meaning of a culture's words, you can destroy the culture. And what has happened is that we've had the word forgive changed in its definition to pardon. So we've been taught, I forgive, I pardon myself, I pardon you, for what's going on inside of me. And if we call the act of pardoning, letting myself or another off the hook for what's been done, then if we call that forgiveness, then we think we've forgiven when we haven't. We've only pardoned. And what we're working with is a first century Aramaic definition of the word forgive, which is a tool for removal of the part of my mind that I do need to learn about and that I do need to heal. So we suggest to people never forgive anybody, never forgive yourself for anything, but if you find yourself functioning out of a space that you'd rather not function out of, then you apply forgiveness to heal that part of your mind. So it's a little different dynamic than the world's definition of the word. So if I find myself in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, I don't forgive the person who brought that up for me. All they did was whatever their behavior was brought it up for me. I apply forgiveness to my hostility, my fear, my rage, my guilt, my grief, and I'm free of it. And now I function with the same human mind. That's the idea of forgiveness that we're working with and the tool we're using. Does that make sense?
Well, he just dropped off.
Oh, we lost it.
Okay. So what happened there?
Okay. Well, Buddy, if you're still there, I don't know what happened. If it was a disconnect, but call back in. We'd love to chat. 646-200-4169 is our calling number. And if you have a question or a thought for us, we would love to hear your voice and hear what support you have to offer, hear what insight you have to offer, and share with you the best we know of the first century Aramaic process of forgiveness. How do I go inside myself and remove my insanity, my fear, my rage, my guilt, my grief? You know, it's interesting. I'll get people who'll hear that I'm doing this workshop called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that it's about forgiveness. And they'll say, well, you know, I really don't need to do that because I've already forgiven everybody, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my kids, my parents, my spouse, my former spouse. I've even forgiven my future spouses. And what I know is the person who languages that hasn't done any forgiveness work today and has no clue what the word forgive means. They think that the Greek idea, pardoning, is forgiveness. And we're here to say that's not what it means. At least, not in the first century Aramaic context where we see literal miracles happen as a result of forgiveness. when I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, I don't change anything that's happening inside of me, which means that I'm going to get to do the why is this happening to me again thing, because my mind can only replicate what's in it. And if I've got something painful in there, I'm going to find a circumstance, and another circumstance with which to play that out. And, of course, the culture has taught me to pretend that I have nothing to do with that. You know, Dr. Tim's point when he first started to speak about how people don't want to look at the fact that it's an inside job. But when I realize it's an inside job, then instead of pretending I'm forgiving by letting somebody else off the hook, I do the actual, pardon me, I want to say difficult work, but it's not difficult, but it can be challenging because I have to look at the hidden parts of my own mind. But when I engage in forgiveness, I remove that part of my mind that plays out over and over and over again, and I get to get finished with the why is this happening to me again experience. And so, again, if you want to access that material, I think I started to talk about that and I got a little bit sidetracked, but you can go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and there's all kinds of free information. Click the bullseye. It opens a full explanation. And in particular, there are at least 14 different radio shows where we've spent a full hour, just about a full hour on each of those shows, walking somebody through the whole worksheet process, the how-to of first century Aramaic forgiveness. So they're free MP3 downloads, and you're certainly welcome to go and do that. And, of course, any questions you have as you engage in the process, we're here to make ourselves available an hour a day, 5 days a week, for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to support you. Actually, I should say for two purposes. One, to support you, and two, to make the first century understanding of the Aramaic tools available universally to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So that's what we're here to do. And we're glad that you're the listening ears that carry the vibration into who knows what parts of the world. We've heard from all different corners of the world in the process. So Jeannie, do we have anything else happening in the chat room or anybody else with a hand up?
No, not right at the moment. I just happened to, I don't know what, something in our conversation in the chat room brought up the thought out of the Course in Miracles about symbols of symbols, and that, when the image that we see in our mind is actually our symbol made up of our mind of what's really in front of us, and then when we give it a name, that it's a symbol of a symbol, and it's another step removed from what the truth is. So I don't know why that came up, but...
Probably because it's an important piece to talk about at this point. And so it's a good place to go at this point, I think, with the whole process of the conversation. And so, when you recognize, if we apply Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. So Einstein was saying, in essence, 7.5 billion people are living in an optical delusion, including you and I, if you think you're separate from me and I'm separate from you. I'm living in a picture in my mind. And if I could see who you really were, I would see, and of course this is as far as our language goes, I'm sure it's much, much deeper, but as far as our language goes, if I could see who you actually were, I'd see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. I'd see who you actually are. But my brain, as Einstein says, shows me an optical delusion, a picture. And when I call that picture you, what Jeannie's talking about is, that picture in my mind is a symbol of you. It's a way my mind relates to you, but the symbol is made up of what you resonated me. So let's say you resonate fear and rage in me. I'm going to say, I don't like you. If you resonate sweetness and beauty in me, I'm going to say, oh, you are so cool. I like you so much. But it's the symbol that I'm looking at. This is one of the things that destroys relationships over and over and over again. We relate to the people we are in relationship with as the symbols in our mind. And when they are bringing forward pleasing parts of our minds, then the symbol is pleasing and we approve of what they bring forward in us. So we, in our culture, calls that loving somebody. So we say, oh, you give me such good warm fuzzies, I love you so much. And it isn't love at all. It's simply approval, because you're resonating the part of my mind that I like to play with, I like to be in relationship with. And so what you resonate in me is what creates the optical illusion, or what Einstein calls the optical delusion. And that's a symbol of you. And then, of course, as Jeannie said, when I put a word to that symbol and I say, oh, Charlie, and I think that you're actually the word that I use, when the word I use is a symbol for the symbol in my mind of you. So there's you, this awesome presence of love. You resonate sadness in me, and I go into my sadness and say, oh, you caused me sadness, and I have a picture in my mind with my sadness attached, and the pictures of you, so I'm sure you're the cause of my sadness. And so my symbol, sadness, in my mind represents you, becomes you, and then I name you, and I'm two generations away from the truth of who you are. When I'm willing to collapse and think in terms of those two generations, think in terms of collapsing them so that they disappear, I come back to an experience of who you really are. And out of that experience of who you really are, I will tend to get an experience of who I really am. I'll tend to start to experience me as that active presence of love that I'm designed to experience myself as, rather than experiencing myself out of my own optical delusions. That's a great point, Jeannie. That fits really well, I think, at this stage in the conversation, and right on track with everything we're talking about. So 646-200-4169 is our calling number. If you have a thought, a question, an answer, an idea for it, we'd love to say hello. So, Jeannie, I don't know what the strange noises are in the background here. I'm hearing a buzzing noise. Is there anybody with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? Did we lose you, Jeannie? Are you mute challenged? Well, Dr. Tim, can you hear me? Am I disconnected somehow?
You are there, Michael, and I heard the noises as well, but I do not hear Jeannie.
Okay, Jeannie just told me that her phone crashed and reset, but we do have a caller, area code 828. So 828, you are on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? Hello, 828. Are you there? Well, I don't know what's happening, Jeannie. Are they open in the chat room or in the phone queue? Is there...
Hello?
Hey there, are you? Is this 828? Is this 828?
Yeah, this is
Magdalena.
I didn't press one, but I'm glad to talk with you.
Oh, hey there, young lady. Okay, well, maybe you're not the 828 that Jeannie was referring to, but she said she had an 828 with their hand up. So, how do you be today?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm doing fine. Yeah, did a nice worksheet this morning on some issue that came up, and was lucky enough to be able to sit right down and do a worksheet on it. It's so beautiful to not have to wait, you know, to be able to do the work and clear things while it's still fresh and active. Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to seeing the new version of the worksheet that you spoke of earlier.
Yeah. Well, there's a slight renovation in the look of it, and then that passage over on the right that's about where it said, I release my need, where I'm substituting the word cancel there, and so it's going to change it slightly. So I cancel my need to be right and to make up another story to prove that I'm right. Prove my hallucination is right. And you know, it's interesting that when you tie Einstein together with this thought, you know, most people are living in hallucinations most of their lives. because they look around and they see a world of bodies, and they think those bodies are actually there, and they think they're all separate bodies. And, of course, now maybe somebody knows better than Einstein. I don't know. I found on most points when I look at how Einstein speaks about the way the world works, that he's a whole lot smarter than I am. So when he says, we think we're separate or separated, we're living in an optical delusion, I think we could probably take it as truth. And the forgiveness process collapsing those optical delusions is pretty awesome.
In regard to what you just said about the forgiveness process, which I completely understand now, and I will admit that it was a foreign concept to me when I first heard it 6 or 7 years ago when I met you, because I understood forgiveness the way it is commonly understood with that Greek interpretation of letting
right.
someone else off the hook. However, with all that, I just heard the conversation you had with the caller, and it reminded me of a statement that a friend of mine made several weeks ago, and he was wondering if a lot of people who might be interested in doing this work for their own benefit and growth are, in fact, turned off or put off by the huge barrier that understanding forgiveness in the ancient Aramaic understanding of it, that just puts a stop for some people who actually could benefit beautifully by doing the work without using the word forgiveness, just by using the cancel, release, remove, which are the other meanings of the Aramaic. So can you speak to that? Do you think it's possible? This person was positing that it would be possible to teach all of the steps on the worksheet without utilizing the word forgiveness, and thereby more people could be availing themselves of this wonderful tool. Would you like to speak to that?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be delighted to speak to that because I've considered it. I've looked at it. I've had people for years say, well, why don't you just forget? Why don't you just start a whole new thing? And here's my take, and I'll tie it back into what was said about changing the meaning of words, Vladimir Lenin. Change the meaning of words, you can destroy a culture. And, a culture, for instance, a culture of forgiveness is based in words, and those words connect to huge amounts of experience and information. When you change the meaning of the words, you disappear that experience and information, and you render people unable to think logically or rationally about whatever that word represents. And so my take is, and the reason why I'm working to restore the original meaning of the word forgive, is when we restore the meaning of the word forgive, people get to reconnect with the deeper experience and the deeper ability to reason about it. And so what I'm looking to do is to restore the whole understanding, and I certainly understand that it's a challenge, and it's like, whatever block people use to cut themselves off or something, my take is the person who, over the word forgive would say, well, I'm not going to change my definition, therefore I don't want to do it. I think that that's another excuse for I don't want to look at what I need to look at. And so that's the reason that, and I made this choice years ago, rather than starting with a new word, there were people who said, the Aramaic word is Shabbat. Why don't you just call this Shabbaking? Why don't you just forget that whole forgiveness thing? And there are some people who've picked it up and taken it and done that. I haven't seen many results from it when people have done that. But what I'm looking to do is a bigger project, and that is
to restore to humanity our heritage of forgiveness, which will give us a deeper ability to comprehend, to connect with, and to reason upon this whole process of internal healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my reason for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when I offer this to people, I'll oftentimes say, and you know, if you want to stick with the old definition, go for it. But here's the tool. Why don't you try it and see what happens? And as you engage in it, what you'll realize is that you get to connect with forgiveness on a whole different level.
Yeah, I totally agree that it does give us the ability to conceptualize everything at a deeper level by having the Aramaic understanding of forgiveness. And I like
we've lost a richness. We've lost a richness, and I'm looking to restore that richness. You know, we could take, and I've actually been considering, I've sort of been making some notes on another book on the words, that meanings that have been changed, because it is huge. In fact, just about every key and important concept have been changed. You know, let's look at a few of them. We say to each other, I love you. And the truth is, love is a noun. It's what we are. It's not something we do to each other. You can't think rationally or logically about love if you don't have a correct definition of the word. So, you know, if we took all the words that have been changed, and the list is just about endless, then we'd have to change the whole vocabulary. We'd have to make, you know, there's virtually a false vocabulary running the world, and we'd have to make up a whole new vocabulary in order to go back to the original meaning. So to me, it's like, let's go back to the original meaning. So, you know, Jeannie and I will still say to each other on occasion, I love you, but we know that that doesn't mean the world's definition of approval of you, but what we're really saying is, I cherish you in my life, and I choose to be love in your presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I've got some work to do, because if Jeannie gives me the look and up comes some of my hostility or fear, and I'm committed to being love in her presence, I'm going to have to forgive or clean up what takes me out of love. And so you just take that word, and there's another whole huge field that has been so beaten and abused and turned backwards. I mean, you look at people who, you know, oh, love is self-sacrifice. Here, let me put my head on the chopping block. Go ahead, beat me with a hammer. I'll take your blows. I'll suffer, and then you'll know that I love you.
Right. Like, I'll die for you.
It's totally irrational.
Right.
Because they're not working with the right definition of the words.
Yeah,
and we can go on and on and on.
Right. The proof of that in regard to just the word love is that no one can really define it. How many books have been written about what love really is? And there's no real agreement, because it's being treated as a verb instead of a noun, instead of our essence and our being. So I think that's really great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, I had a gentleman asking that question last night at the workshop. Well, you know, you're talking about love. Tell me what it is. It's like, well, look over here on the left side of the board. You know, Jeannie opened the workshops on Sunday with the question, how many have ever held a newborn? Tap into the essence of the newborn and give us a descriptor. And she's got this whole list of words. And so I walk this gentleman over the board and I look and say, now, all of these describe the newborn. But is the newborn there on the board? Is love there? No. But you'll notice that every word is some variation on the theme of the descriptors that we have for love. You know, we were in an alternative school of kids, 14 to maybe 17 back a couple of years ago, out in Washington State, and Jeannie, you know, asked the question, how many have ever held a newborn? And these kids were giving her words. She had to ask them how to spell them. I mean, the kids were geniuses, but they were outcast from the school. It was an alternative school. And so Jeannie's got probably 10 things on the list: beauty, peace, sweetness, awesome presence, love, you know, a whole list. And there's one girl in the back of the room who's just excitingly waving her hand And she gets up when Jeannie calls her and says, well, you know, all those words, I've got a two-year-old baby. The reason she was in this class was because she was pregnant at, I think, 13 or 14. But she's like, I've got a two-year-old baby, and all those words describe her, but they don't even come close to who she is. There are no words. You can't put that one together. That's why we use that list so regularly and refer to it so regularly, to recognize that who we are is so far from being able to be put into words, but to recognize that the word love represents our state of being is to change everything in the mind about relationships and love. So when you ask people to change their minds about everything, it engenders resistance.
Yes.
And we could go on with at least 100 key words in our culture that the definitions mm-hmm. have been changed of in order to manipulate people into insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, well, I'm really glad that I happened to get on the call today, even though I didn't push the button. I was thinking of that question, so maybe, you know, just my thoughts pushed the button for me. I'm not sure.
I think what I'll do. How are you enjoying being back in winter, having spent a couple of weeks in Hawaii?
It's fabulous. Really, the sun is shining and it's there, and we're getting into our warm days now. We're it's 45 today, 45, nice and warm.
Awesome.
I want to say, though, about one of the things that we agreed to do in our support group. Our Tuesday support group is to bring in some of the information that you present on the show from time to time. And I think that's a really good one. I think that I will bring that forward this coming week. Because I think what I heard you say, and let me check this to make sure that I heard what you meant to say, is that for you, your desire is to reinstate and teach the true meaning of the word forgiveness and love and so forth. And if someone is really not wanting to be dedicated to that, they could, in fact, use the worksheet with people, introduce the tool, and perhaps release the focus on the word forgiveness and just introduce the tool so that people use it, and eventually they probably will begin to understand forgiveness. Do I have that?
Hey, it's cool with me. Go for it. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I'm just focusing on what my project is, what my purpose is in doing it and taking it forward.
Fabulous. That's a great distinction to have. So I'm glad I accidentally got on. Oh, and before I sign off, I'd like to thank you and Jeannie and everyone else who has been holding a space for our kitty cat, who's been missing since September, to come back or to be found. We are in the process of waiting right now for her to get comfortable enough with the people whose house she's visiting to obtain food every once in a while. And we took her food over there and some things that she would recognize the scent of so that she can become more comfortable. Eventually, we're hoping that she will allow herself to step into a live trap so that we can bring her home here. So I want to ask you and Jeannie and Dr. Tim and everybody who is listening to hold the space that she will return to us if that is for her and our best and highest good.
I certainly hold the space for that, for sure.
Cool. She's the little white and black one that you met once upon a time when she was still in the house. Yeah, so thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, well, we hope that she's safe and that she gets the love that you guys are extending and is willing to come home and stay there.
Great. I hope that as well. Thank you so much. I love you all, and you have a beautiful, blessed day. Bye-bye.
All right, blessings. Lots of love.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, thinking in terms of the Ozarks, there's another event that's happening in Ozarks, actually probably right about as we're speaking. And everybody's heard Jim Farmer on the show from time to time. And Jim has a cataract in one of his eyes, so he's going in for eye surgery today. So we would just invite everybody in the community to just see Jim and hold Jim in that space of love. And the surgeon and all the attendants, whoever's involved in this whole process, that each person's mind and heart are guided to hold and to be the space of love, and that the surgery just comes off easily, perfectly, and that within a couple of days, Jim is back to seeing full force in the eye that's getting the surgery today, and that he just rocks along. So we hold that space, and also Jim was sharing with me this morning, you know, Jim is years and years and years before he came in touch with this work, he had gone through some back injuries and back surgeries and spinal fusions and those sorts of things, and that's something that he's been having some challenges with, and he shared with us on some of the earlier shows that you know, when he first got to Heartland, he was walking with a cane and was pretty humped over with that back pain, and that through the process of the intensives this summer, he didn't notice, but others who were walking behind him noticed that he's walking up the hill carrying his cane instead of using his cane, and his back was straightening out, and the surgeon that he's worked with previously, at least as I understand it, that's who he's talking to, has suggested that he do another spinal fusion. And so he's looking toward getting that set up and doing that perhaps sometime within the next couple of months. So let's just hold the space for Jim and his surgeon to make the perfect decision, the perfect choice to do what will serve best for Jim to be vital and healthy and alive and able to rock and roll. Jim's really on the team for this work and supporting us with Heartland and taking projects forward. And, you know, he's made the move. Jim was on the support team about, I guess about 10 years ago. He was there for a year. And then he came back the early part of this summer. He actually had come back just to do an intensive. And after the intensive and really tapping back in with the flow of the work, he decided to pack up his space in Florida, and he drove back down there and got his stuff and moved back to Heartland. So he's now a full-time resident of Heartland and full-time support with carrying this work forward to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So, Jim, we appreciate you, and we see all of these medical issues being handled easily and strengthening and vitalizing you in being that eternal being of light that we know you are. So we're glad you're on our team, and we are delighted to be on your team. And I did mention Susan a little earlier, and I want to just offer congratulations to Susan and put the energy forward that there's high vitality and everything's rock and roll for her. Tonight she starts her second Laws of Living class. So she's got, I think, about a half a dozen people that are going to be starting an 8-week Laws of Living class with her. So, Susan, we certainly hold the space that your opening class tonight is absolutely awesome. And your evaluation really shows that you're ready to move to the next level with everything. And it's just so cool to watch how you've taken a hold of this in such a short period of time. You know, there are lots of people who talk and talk and talk and talk, and you came to Heartland, I think, for the first time about 3 years ago. You did an intensive. You came back the next year. You did an intensive. You came back once again, and you picked up and you did what you said you're going to do. You started to teach, and you're on it, and it's awesome. We did get to connect at Wilmington with the people that that Susan's working with, and she just did an awesome job of community building within the Laws of Living class, and so I see that happening again with this class and moving forward. So congratulations. We appreciate you. So, Jeannie.
Michael? Yes,
sweetie?
We have a question in the chat room, and then we also have a hand up. In the chat room, the question is, how can I discern what I think is intuition to make sure that it isn't clouded with intellect or denial? In the past, there have been quote-unquote knowings, but then in hindsight found out that they were contaminated by content that they didn't even know was there. And then in addition to
right.
that is someone was saying that alignment is superior to intuition, and they thought that intuition was part of the process of being in alignment. So is intuition part of the process of being in alignment, and how can they tell that it's really intuition and it's not tainted with their own carbon-based memory thoughts?
Okay. Well, good topic. So my thought would be that, first of all, when we are in alignment, we make ourselves available for higher guidance, which is our intuition or inner tutor, inner teacher. So the whole idea of the work is to be taught directly from within. You know, if you go to the first century Aramaic meaning of the words Ruach HaKodesh that the Greeks translate as the Holy Spirit, here's another word change that's been, you know, just horrendous in its impact in the world. And in the first century Aramaic, these words Ruach HaKodesh have nothing to do with a disembodied spirit being. They speak about a literal feminine elemental force in us that will teach us, that will undo the effects of our errors. And so when we start to tap into this elemental force, we will be taught directly. This is our intuition. And that comes about and is more easily tapped into, would be my take, as we are aligned, when we do have Rachma and Kubha set, when our words, our thoughts, our actions are all in alignment, when we know what our primary and secondary purpose are, we tie all those things together. How do you tell if what feels like guidance is really guidance? So first of all, if there's any form of hostility or fear in it, in any way, shape, or form, it's not guidance. It's carbon-based memory coming in. And oftentimes we can pretend to ourselves, but for me, what I've discerned is that if there's an area in my life where I have an issue, where I have some form of hostility or fear, I'm probably not going to get very accurate intuitive input on that issue until I clean that issue up. So if I go, you know, oh, this relationship stuff, it's nasty, it's and I go on with all of that, and they did this and they did that, and then I come up with my intuition. Oh, my intuition says that even though last year, you know, I married you and I was guided to spend my life with you, well, my intuition is now saying it's time for me to move on. So I think I'll go. You know, that's not intuition. But it can come forward with this flowery, you know, we see this often at Heartland. People will come and make a commitment to do their work, and they'll say, yep, man, I'm on it. I'm going to do this. I was so guided that I have to be here. And then I've seen people in as little as 2 days, when their stuff started to come up, all of a sudden their guidance changed. Oh, well, now I'm guided to leave. It's like, you were not guided. You were probably guided to be here to do your work, but the power that guides us knew what was going to happen 2 days after you arrived here and that your stuff was going to come up, and it hasn't changed its mind. You're here to do your work. Follow your guidance. But oftentimes the mind will jump in with this flowery story about how, well, now I've been guided to leave, so I'm going to leave. It's not guidance. It's carbon-based memory trying to pretend to be guidance and setting up another story to avoid dealing with what's going on inside of me. So that would be my take. And if we're not complete with thoughts around that, let's start the show out with that question tomorrow. Whoever had that question, if you call in, if you have more information or more questions about it, that would be awesome. But in the meantime, we're down to just a few seconds, so we've got to close the show out. So we appreciate you being here. If you're in the Tampa area, come join us tonight at Unity North in Tampa tomorrow night. Saturday, we're doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. Sunday, we'll start at Unity in St. Pete with a whole week of workshops there. Check whyagain.org for our schedule. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Give the world a gift. Give them the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio.
For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.